Welcome to Second One First, the world's most okayest golf podcast. You with Vinny and Heath.
What's up, everybody?
Please follow us on Instagram, Twitter, and Facebook at Second One First. Get those followers up. Big day. We got another guest.
We have an amazing guest.
The white whale?
The Matt Aylward is with us tonight. I can't wait to talk to him.
You've been waiting for this interview.
Yeah,
for
man. 3 years. He's like the most interesting man in the world.
I can't wait to share this interview with everybody.
I mean, he's, wait until you hear about his background. I can't wait to talk about him.
Did you sleep last night knowing the interview was today?
I slept for probably 15, 20 minutes. So excited. So excited to have him on.
Let's get over to Tourist Talk.
Yeah, let's just get into it. Because this is the big thing. All right, so we usually start off with a live tour. And this is what we're talking about right here.
The live tour. Yeah.
And I don't know where this rumor comes from. It just started popping up on social.
Is it a rumor?
That's what the rumors have it. That's what everybody says. It's a rumor has it.
Not confirmed.
So they're saying the Live Tour is buying 400 acres of land for $36 million with Core and Crenshaw engaged to build a tournament course played the week before or the week after the Masters. And it's literally 10 minutes away from Augusta.
I mean, if it's true, it's one of the funniest and most petty things in the world.
I mean, it is like a bunch of board members. Like, how can we really stick it to them?
Do you think they do a layout similar to Augusta?
I mean, it's...
So first, let's start off with, like, do you play it the week before or after the Masters?
Before.
You gotta go before.
Right? Yeah, you have to go before.
Put it before.
It's like the lead up? Come on. You don't do the after the Masters.
No one's gonna
come and gone.
Yeah, you gotta do the week before.
Right before, people come to that. And you know they're gonna throw money at
I love this petty money.
And make it just as elite.
But how do they make it elite? Because their format doesn't make it elite.
No, but the course itself.
Oh, gotcha.
The course itself is only members, you know.
Oh, it's super like secret society stuff.
Secret society. And it's going to be, I mean, this blows my mind.
It's so funny, dude.
Things, at this point in the world, things don't surprise me.
No, this is such a funny move.
But this surprised me.
But if you're the Masters, right, and if they did buy this land and they are going to play a week before, you don't invite live player tours, correct? Because that's why they invited people, because they could. That's their obligation to invite players.
The Masters is like, if you qualified, you get to come and play no matter what tour you're on.
You don't invite live players, right?
But after this, it's like you're taking a big old dump right on my front yard. Yeah. You're done. You're done.
100%. It's so funny. And you take back the green jackets that any of those guys wore.
Right? I don't know if they can do that.
Yeah, I know.
But they probably could sneak into their house.
That is so funny, dude.
I mean, if this is true.
I love it.
This is crazy. And, you know, hats off to the Live to make it interesting.
So that means Live Tour is going to be around for a while.
Yeah. Well, I mean, how long does it take to build a golf course? But like, you know, from the sale... To get into design, to get into actually architecture, and then all the construction
studies and stuff.
I mean, this is 5 years away, right?
Minimum three.
I would say minimum three. So Live Tour's
plan to be around.
They're not just like a startup that like hope we survive. They're like, oh yeah, we're
gonna do this.
We're down to be around.
We're down to clown. PGA news.
Yeah.
18 Pebble Beach. Crazy hurricane winds.
Wow. I mean, it's so crazy how night and day it is with the winds.
Yeah.
Like in the morning, peaceful. People like walking around. It's gorgeous. They're just hitting 300 yard bombs, you know, no big deal. Then in the afternoon when the wind picks up, I mean, some of the players were hitting 7 irons. I think it's number 6, that short par three. I think it was 7. Playing 113.
Right.
113 yards, they were hitting 7 irons. These guys blast 7 irons 180, 190 yards.
That's crazy.
No, that is crazy.
Wait for it. Legendary.
And yeah, I mean, seven iron, like not a full seven iron, but it's a controlled, like low seven
iron.
Let's
even
say
you're taking something off it. You're still hitting a buck 60.
Yeah. That's 50 yards off.
Yeah.
Like
even if you're flying,
you're
down to get it out of the wind. That's still crazy.
I mean, that's crazy. The wind is out
Justin
there.
Rose won in a delayed win.
Yeah. Good job, Justin. I mean, he's kind of went away there for a while.
Yeah. You know, he's definitely on the older side.
I mean, yeah. I mean, he's older, but he's not like old.
But a W though.
But a W at Pebble Beach. You always like to win during those big.
I'm mad because Fitzpatrick got cut.
He did.
He's from England. He should know how to play in these conditions.
That's what I would have thought. That's what I would have thought. I would have been like, oh yeah.
Your boy Seamus.
Seamus Power tied for 15th.
So you get the point.
I get the point. The point. Ooh, it's close. Heath has 3. Vinny has 2.5 because he
picked a winner. this week, I'm actually going to go, I think, Thursday to the Phoenix Open.
Oh, dude, you are going to love it.
Phoenix Open on Thursday.
You're going out to Phoenix for the big game, which is going to be awesome.
Yeah.
But the better time will be at the Phoenix Open. You're going to love it, dude.
I can't wait.
You're going to love it. It is such a shit show.
How does it compare to Riv? Because I've been to Riv many times.
It doesn't compare to Riv. It is a completely different experience.
Really?
It is a bunch of young people. Like, it is a frat party. It's the biggest frat party on a golf course ever. Like, tons of dudes with
collars and khakis.
Popped collars. Tons of girls in little short skirts.
I love it because that's exactly how me and my crew are rolling to the game. I'm sure.
It's going to be amazing.
Collars and khakis.
I mean, get ready to stand in line for the bar. Like, you got to find one of the bars out on the course.
Like 16.
Yeah.
Like, oh, not 16.
Like, out on like number 8. Four. Like, yeah. out there where there aren't very many people, but it's like, oh, there's no line to that bar. Go to there. But I mean, the last time I was there, it was amazing. There was the green, mm-hmm. and then, you know, on the fringe, there's the ropes that you can't walk past, right? Uh-huh. There was a little bank that goes up, and this woman was laying headfirst down the bank with a little bit of vomit near her head.
Gross.
So she threw up, and she was just yelling at random people like, I'm a teacher! I'm a good teacher too. I teach the youth of America. Like, she was hammered.
That's what you want teaching
I'm just
children.
Like, oh wow, this is great. It's so good. I mean, you're gonna have a heck of a time. I hope you hope you take pictures.
Oh, of course.
So we got. The field is pretty good.
Well,
out there is
the first full field major event.
Yes, and it is a. It's
the ones that the PGA just added.
And there's some talent.
Everyone.
We got Rory, Rahm, Schauffele, Scheffler, Finau, Morikawa, Cantlay, JT, Max Homa. I mean, the list goes on and on and on. Spieth.
So what are you going to take here?
This is tough. This is tough. Has Rory ever played this?
I can't remember. I think maybe he played it 2-3 years ago, but I can't remember him really in it.
Yeah, that's... I'm going to stay away from him. I'm going to pick my boy.
John Rahm go 4-for-4.
Oh, that would be
3-for-4.
That would be good, wouldn't it?
I mean, it'd be amazing.
It would be good. I'm going to go with the underdog, though.
Oh, yeah?
Sam Burns.
Okay.
My boy Sam Burns.
Plus 4,200.
Yep.
Man, I'm going to go Victor Hovland.
You're going to go Hovland. That's the second time you've picked him this year.
Yeah, he had a decent showing at Pebble, so I think he's...
Wow, okay. I like it. I like it. Good luck, Hovland and Burns.
Good luck. Shall we head on... Oh, no, boy. Time for some therapy session. Let's head on over to Twosome. Twosome. So we talk about our golf life. And this week we need some therapy because we had a little dust up on the course this week.
We didn't have a dust up. I wouldn't call it that.
It was enough to make people uncomfortable that we were fighting.
Oh, I was so mad.
So we played Terra Hata.
Yeah. Played Terra Hata, both playing
extremely well.
So good. It was like there were no doubles on the card.
Yeah, I had a triple at the end on 18, I think.
On 18, I had
quad. I think.
Is that a quad. I had an eight. Yeah.
But up until then,
I mean, it was back and forth. So, but let me start off by saying
it's a short course, regardless. But go on.
It's not a short course, I wouldn't say.
Yes, it is, because both of our tee marks, our tees we chose to play.
Yeah.
Were both 400 yards shorter than we normally play.
Right. Okay. Yes. I mean, depending on what tees you play. Yes.
Well, same with you. You usually play about 6,400.
Yeah.
I usually play about 6,000.
Yes.
Right?
Yes.
You played 6,000. I played 5,600.
Well, this is the thing I was thinking about the other night after my boiling. Because, like, I want to go back. I want to go back and look at the scorecard.
I've got
and see, because like you play, because there at that course there are like six sets of tees. Right.
There's four.
There's professional, which is silver. There's championship black, blue. Players blue.
Whites are players.
Then there's old people.
No
white.
No.
And then that's the tees you were playing from.
Right, because I normally play whites.
Yeah, and I think it is called old people.
They're called it's called players.
Oh, players. Yeah. Sure.
I look. Trust me, because I was livid.
So, but I want to see, because like you said, I've played whites here before.
Yes.
And sometimes they're back there.
100%.
So on the card, it plays 5,500 yards.
It goes back to my normal argument of I didn't set the course up today.
I understand that.
I'm playing what I'm imagining they're going to level out at some point at 5,600 yards.
Okay, I understand that.
So,
but you played at 4,500.
I don't know.
You were playing from the women's tees.
Maybe.
There was one, there was a par three that I had 198 and you had 86. 86.
I can't help it.
Against 198. I'm hitting my 200 club. And you have a pigeon putt.
Over 150 yards
over so much trash.
So no.
And that's where it got you, because I was like,
I was pissed.
Dude, you pigeon putt hole?
Because here's what happened.
So mad.
You started chirping a little bit the first couple holes about the distance. You made a couple comments about it.
Yep.
And then I started playing really well. I had like four pars in a row. Then you and I actually had a talk about what tees you were actually playing. Because you were like, blue. And so that's when, like, so after that, you kind of chirped again there.
Yeah, because I was like, oh, well, if you're playing whites and I play blues, we get the same amount of strokes. So I'm going to just do that.
I will say this is a personal internalization, because I was playing really well. I was like, this dude's going to take away from me playing fucking lights out today.
Absolutely.
By saying it was short.
Yardage. Well, I mean, don't get me wrong, and I don't mean to make you feel bad, but on 90% of the tee boxes, you were playing on the same tees as my wife, which she was playing the reds.
It was four.
40.
It was four, eight, four holes.
40, 80%. So, 80%.
Anyhow, that got me. And then when you did the pitch and putt, I was like, that was it. That was the snap.
I knew you were steaming. Living. And then we got into some words. Both my wife and the other guy we were playing with felt majorly awkward.
Because we got into it. Because I was like, I can't, first of all, I can't help what the dude set up.
It's true.
And I know you were pissed.
F that guy.
I know you were pissed because I was playing well and you were playing well. So usually when you play well, you can gain strokes on
right.
me. And I was playing really well.
Yes.
Because the front nine, I shot a 38 or something like that. Two over or something like that.
Yes.
39.
Yeah. I think,
38.
Yeah.
So that's why you were pissed.
I was so pissed. Because I'm like, oh, really? If I had a pitch and putt, like I would kill it too. Come on.
But you're playing 400 yards up too.
Huh?
You're playing 400 yards shorter than you normally do.
Technically. But I want to go back and I want to look at the scorecard and see what the, like, for example, that number 11 hole, what whites are on the scorecard.
Hold on. I'll go get it.
Yeah, go get it. Because he literally, If number 11 is 150 yards, I'm going to be so mad because he had 86 yards, literally a pitch and a putt. So that's not fair. Like they gotta be at least kind of close to the tee box. Oh, you can't find it. Of course. You know what? We could probably use the interweb. All right, I'm going to look it up. I'm looking it up right now. I got it. All right, so the interweb says, Jirahata, let me see this. Number 11, did you hit it 185 yards?
No. That's on the card, though.
That's on the card. That's what I'm saying. You were playing the tees, and I get why they do it, because they want to
wind, whatever. It's the whole thing.
What? No, it's not even wind. It's like, oh, the white tees are scuffed up, so we're going to move them forward so that we can grow the grass back. But, I mean, there are holes on here. Literally on the card, it says 185. If you were hitting 185, that's a whole lot different than 86
just
yards.
Just playing with the greenskeeper gaming, bro.
I get it. Oh, so mad. Anyway, let's move on. People.
It's called I win.
People don't like us arguing.
Vinny takes a 3-0 lead.
3-0. Yeah, you did. We both shot an 81, right, which was crazy. I was playing out of my mind. So I was like, all right, until the last hole where I lost a ball, and then I should have just chipped it out. But, you know, I tried to go for it, lost another ball, and I got an 8. Oh, well.
We have a special guest this week.
We do, and it's going to be awesome. Let's head on over to our interview.
With Matt.
Aylward. All right, everybody, we are here with Matt Aylward, the man, the myth, the legend.
Heath's White Whale interview.
It's my White Whale interview. This is a long time coming. How's it going, buddy?
I love it. Just shout out to the fact that you said my last name correctly. That's like one of my biggest pet peeves in the entire world is when people say my last name wrong. I know it's not the easiest thing.
What do you get?
You nailed it.
What do you get?
I get how much percentage of the population is dyslexic by saying Ally word.
Because it's A-Y-L-W-O-R-D.
Yeah.
So
yeah.
Ally word?
So it's, yeah. So I always get the Ally word, or people just like give up and they just say A word, which is actually not the worst. But yeah, Ally word really, really, really grinds my gears a bit. I'm just like, just pay a little bit of attention.
It's
just
two letters. It's two letters.
Yeah.
Well, I'm glad I nailed it.
Yeah, you absolutely crushed it. We're at strong start.
Boom, baby. Yeah.
We might change to the world's best podcast.
Oh, now. Next best.
Oh, yeah. Okayest is done. We're growing.
So that's all we need. So tell us a little bit about yourself. Where are you from? Like, how did you... Because we want to preface, you are a professional dancer.
Yep.
Okay. So where are you from? When did you start dancing? Like, what's your background?
Yeah. I grew up in Charlotte, North Carolina. Mm. I started dancing when I was 13 years old. I went to an arts middle school because growing up, I was in all the musicals and plays at my church growing up. And then my parents saw that I was interested in it. So they sent me to the best arts program middle school in Charlotte, which was Piedmont Open Middle School.
Okay.
And I got put in dance on accident. Really is. I say it. It's the best accident that's ever happened to me. I got put in dance on accident, and then the rule at the school was you had to try the elective that you were placed in for 2 weeks. And if after 2 weeks you were not feeling it, they would then place you in a different elective, because it's an art school. They're trying to promote creativity. They're not trying to stifle these kids. And and so I came home. I remember coming home after the first day of dance class, just like bawling, crying, talking about how I didn't want to do it. This is what I was signed up for. I just wanted to be an actor. Just wanted to be on stage. And my dad was like, well, let's just try it out and see what happens. And then 2 weeks later, he asked me how I felt. And I was like, oh, I love it. I was like, this is the most fun I've ever had. It's like, it allowed me to realize I was a visual learner. Uh-huh. It allowed me to realize that copying a shape, you know, like it was almost like copy and paste was allowed. Like that was like, that's how you excelled. Was
with
like,
your body.
Do this with your body. Yeah. Make this shape. Okay, cool. I can do that. I can make that shape. And then doing that and then learning like the very bare bones, like tap dance, like rudimentary stuff, like toe heel, cramp rolls, stuff like that. Cause I was also in jazz band. So I was like really big into music.
Yep.
So coming from playing so many instruments to learning tap dance to physically embodying an instrument was like a brain explosion for me where I was like, oh, I don't need anything besides myself to make this music. And then I went to a dance studio in Charlotte. I started doing competitive dance, which is like AAU basketball, but for dance.
Yeah. and so
did that, was on a competition team, did that. Yeah.
And you got really, really good at counting to eight.
Oh dude, I'm still maybe one of the best.
One of the best.
Eight. I mean, that's what I tell everyone. Like when I tell everyone what I do for work, they're like, oh, you're a dancer. And like at normally like myself, when I start that conversation, the immediate response is, well, what kind of dancer? And I'm like, okay, this conversation's already over, but sure. So I pretty much just tell people I count to eight for a living. I say eights and shapes. I count to eight and make shapes with eights and shapes. That's eights pretty much what I do.
Well, I mean, it's amazing. Start at 13. You didn't really love it at first, but then it like became your career. And yeah. I want to just highlight, like, you had the job of every dancer's dream. You went on tour with Justin Timberlake.
It was my dream. I'm not even a dancer.
Right. Yeah.
Yeah. I just got extremely, extremely lucky. That was what I wanted to do growing up. I remember taking Marty Kadelka, who is Justin's choreographer. I remember taking his class. I remember growing up, my sister would always have like NSYNC posters on her yeah. wall in her room. She had all the marionette dolls
nice.
From the No Strings Attached album. And so we would always listen to boy bands. And I always loved NSYNC more than Backstreet Boy and all that stuff. And so when I took Marty's class for the very first time, he taught My Love. So that was my first entrance into his class ever. And after that class, I was like, this is what I want to do. This is it. This is like, I'm throwing all my eggs into one basket. I want to dance for Justin Timberlake. That's all I wanted to do. Like at my studio, we would be doing leaps and turns, like going across the floor, doing like basic across the floor stuff. And I would go and I'd do my leaps and my turns. Then as soon as I got done to the end of the line, I would start practicing My Love. I would start doing Justin Timberlake choreography that I learned off of YouTube. And like to the point where my teachers would pause the music and I would just get caught doing choreography and they were like, oh, look, Matt's doing My Love again. I was like, I was always doing my love.
I love that. So was there a big audition that you had to audition or how did you get on tour with JT?
That's probably the coolest thing that's happened to me in my entire life. There was no audition. Justin picked one dancer, Marty picked one dancer, and then they kind of filled out the cast, just kind of like selective, like Marty picked his people to do this. I did not get selected to do the tour.
Okay.
So the tour happened, they were gone for like 4 or 5 months, and I kind of had like given up hope because I thought that like I knew this was Justin's last album on his deal, that he was like, all right, cool, this might be it, like this is the last thing, you know, he's doing the whole like, you know, Frank Sinatra suit and tie feel. And I was like, oh, like I would have loved to have done that. But then it just didn't happen for me. So I kind of allowed it to, you know, not be for me.
Sure.
And I was like, all right, cool. Like I'm good. That's not for me. I still have other dreams and things that I want to do, but it's kind of a bummer that this isn't going to happen for me. So I wake up one morning, the girl I was currently dating at the time, she had to get her oil changed in her car. I take her to get her oil changed. It is the Toyota dealership right on Lancashire. If anyone is familiar with that.
Yes, I know that one.
NoHo?
With all the crazy mannequins inside. Right by the worst infrastructure ever built in the world. That six-way death stop of an intersection.
We know it well.
So I took her there and, you know, cool, blah, blah, blah. I sit in the car, I'm waiting for her to get done, and I get a phone call from Marty. Marty calls me. I'm like, yeah, what's up, dude? What's going on? It's like 9 a.m. He was like, hey, just wanted to see what you were doing for the rest of the year. And I was like, well, I was like, I have some teaching stuff lined up, but like, I'm sure it can be rescheduled. You know, I was like, what's going on? He's like, I'll say, he's like, the job is yours. You just have to say yes. And I was like, yes. He was like, great. He was like, you're going on tour with Justin Timberlake. He was like, go to T-Mobile, get an international cell phone, get an international charger, and your flight is tonight at 9 p.m.
Get out of here.
So I then went, I was driving my girlfriend at the time back to her apartment. I literally was at that six-way death stop and like was waiting to turn left and literally just started crying. I was like, oh my God, my dreams just came true. Dreams just came true. All of that. Go pack, go to the airport, start studying film.
One second. Footage, how did that conversation go with that girl? Like, hey, by the way, I'm leaving for a year.
Good question. That's a good question.
Yeah, that's pretty much how it went. I mean, she was incredibly happy for me. Good. Like, you know. But you know, life is all about balance. Like I'm not with that person anymore. I literally got on the plane to London. From the flight to London, I stayed up the entire flight, didn't sleep, and just like studied video footage of the choreography, trying to learn it off of video. From when I got there, we went straight to the venue. I learned all of the choreography, all 12 dances the first day. The second day, I learned all of my spacing, like where I was on stage. And then the third day was my first show.
Get out of here. That is phenomenal, dude.
It took me 8 weeks to learn Ian's wedding dance.
We had to do a dance. Our friend was in an Indian wedding, and we did a full-on, like...
3 minutes deal.
3.5-minute number. And we're not dancers. So that...
Yeah.
I could... Yeah, it took us weeks. And what you learned...
You learned a
two-hour show?
Yeah, about 2.5 hours.
One day, really.
It's awesome.
Good on you, man.
Yeah, thank you. I everyone always says, like, when you're ready, you'll know. I'm like, that's trash. I'm like, you'll know if you make it out alive at the other end. You just got to do it. You know, you just got to do it.
Dude, that's amazing. Yeah,
I was just very, very fortunate to be available, you know, and that was it. That's how I got the tour. And then I went on and did 100 shows with him. Oh, that's awesome. That was my whole year. Pretty much.
Are you dancing for anybody now? Are you teaching?
Right now, I teach on a dance convention. That's mainly what I do for work.
Nice.
I teach. I travel every weekend. Probably like 25 to 30 weekends out of the year. Dang. I'm gone. You know, we go to a hotel. We set up, like, the company I work for is called Revive Dance. Mm. We set up stages. I teach, kids ages like 5 to 20, nice, pretty much every single weekend. And I also have a parents class that I teach as well. Nice. So pretty much every weekend I teach a 5-year-old and I teach a 65-year-old.
That's awesome.
That's pretty much it. Yeah.
Always keeps it fun. Keeps it fun.
Oh, it's fun because the 5-year-old and the 65-year-old learn the same combo.
Uh-huh.
So it's really fun to do the, like, how far has the apple fallen from the tree comparison with the parents and the minis. Yeah.
I love it. So let's transition now into the golf realm of you. When did you start golfing?
My dad taught me when I was probably 9 or 10.
Okay. So you were into golf before you started dancing.
Oh yeah. My dad was very much a range rat. Didn't play a lot of 18 hole. My dad's a lawyer, so he loves his job. He's very much like, he works 7 days a week. Like, he goes into the office on Sundays. Yeah. Like, so on the days where he decided he wouldn't go into work, we would just either go to the driving range or we would go to this little par 3 course called Pebble Creek. And it's this goat track of a par 3, but 18 holes, we would go and that's pretty much how I got into it. And then obviously when I started dancing at 13, I didn't touch a club at all. Until when I was 19, I decided to move to LA. I went to NC State for a year and then decided to move out to Los Angeles. And I just packed my golf clubs in my car when I made the drive from Charlotte to LA.
That's amazing.
And, Yeah, I really got back into golf. My buddies, like my brothers, basically now, Ivan and Tony. I was sleeping on Ivan's couch, you know, dead broke, didn't have any money. Was sleeping on his couch. And then we would always go to Marty's class and Marty would teach. And then after class, Marty and all of his homies would always talk about, yo, do you guys want to hit Whitsett tomorrow? You want to hit Whitsett tomorrow? Yeah. And I was like, what the hell is Whitsett? Yeah. And then I went with them one day and found Whitsett, you know, which is Weddington Golf and Tennis. It's little mm-hmm. part three. And I go there for the first time and you see like Ray Romano and Jim Brown and all these people. I was like, what just happened? Like, what did we just walk into?
And
they're
part
like,
three.
Oh, these guys are here. Yeah. They're like, they're here all the time. And I'm like, this little like terrible little part three course here in the Valley. They're like, yeah, they're like, they love it.
They love
it. So that's when I started golfing again. And I just got the golf bug way, way worse than everyone else. Started like the natural progression, like Whitsett par three into Roosevelt nine, mm-hmm. into Balboa Encino, into Wilson Harding, into Rustic, into trying to cheat your way onto a country club.
Yes, like, that's what I'm talking about. And it's crazy because I have a lot of dancer friends and they are all into golf. Like, what is it? Is it the thing where you're like, I can do this with my body?
It's the flexibility.
It's the flexibility. It could be flexibility. The turn. Like, is it what?
Turn is nice. Unless it works against you for being too flexible.
Right. Yeah.
Then you have to, because right now where I'm at with my swing is I feel like I'm just doing arms to the top and then using my body through. It feels like I'm doing no turn at all. I know I am. But I literally just feel like I'm going arms to the top and then body through.
Yep.
That's the Ron Del Barrio special for sure.
Well, I'm not a dancer and I still feel that. So I get that.
Okay, good.
I get what, so what, all right, back to the dance thing though, because we know JT is a huge golfer. Did you get to golf with him at all on the tour?
I hopped on tour at the after golf thing. So before tour, they were in Tennessee, you know, prepping for a month, and they would go and play like once every other week, you know, on a course out there and everything. Yeah. But I have not played around with him, unfortunately. I would love to, you know, we'll, you know, in our group chat and everything, he's like, boys, I'm back in town. Let's get out and play. And we're like, yeah, dude, you want to come play at Harding? Like,
they'd have to shut the course down.
Come through, dude. The starter knows me there. Like,
well, I'm
free golf carts. Free golf carts,
dude. I'm surprised you can get on Harding. I haven't been able to get on Harding for a year,
like 6 years ago or whatever. But like, it's impossible. I literally looked today because I was trying to play Thursday morning, and the earliest tee time was 10 days from now on Harding at 2:30 p.m.
Is that crazy?
Cool.
It's crazy.
It's impossible.
We talk about it all the time. It's impossible to find a California tee time.
Have we discussed this? Have we discussed the black market app? If it's a real thing, is it not a real thing? Do we know? Does anyone know?
So on our show a few weeks ago, we had Jake on our show. He just started an app called Notify, like Notify, and
smart, clever.
It is an algorithm.
So he totally missed the naming on it. It could have been Notify, but it's Notify.
But it is clever. But it does. It has an algorithm. It searches all of these courses. You sign up. You put in what areas you want to look in, what times and what days, how many players, and then it watches. And so
hell yeah.
And
I
so
need that immediately.
And so it watches. And sometimes it's not until like the day before. So when people cancel. Yeah. It sends you a text like, hey, go on and book your tee time. And it's been great. It's been like, it's, you know, sometimes it just doesn't happen. But sometimes it's like, hey, there's a Rustic tee time at 10:58. Like, go on and book. But you have to be like right on it. So check it out. Yeah. Notify.
On it right now.
Done.
But golf now and then,
this is over.
Golf now and then is trash. Like, it doesn't really help.
Golf now has always been trash.
It's trash. And I mean, I have every course in LA bookmarked in my browser.
Oh, absolutely.
And I just like, you just can't get a tee time before 2:50.
Nope.
It's frustrating.
My buddy The only way that I can actually play golf is I have a friend. His name is Rich Guerin. He is 75 years old. He lives down in Marina Del Rey. I met him. I did a series on my Instagram a long time ago called Paired Up. And that's kind of like the genesis of my golf photography thing.
Yeah.
And I randomly got paired up with this guy, Rich Guerin, like 6 years ago. And literally for 6 years, he will text me probably 2 to 3 times a month, being like, hey, we got the 650 at Balboa on Wednesday. Are you in? I'm like, please God, yes. Like,
Rich is the man.
40. Oh, Rich is the man. He's LA born and raised. Like, nice. He was the yell leader at UCLA when John Wooden was the coach. Whoa, like, this wow. dude has like Luau Cinder days. Like, he has some nice. Of the best like LA stories ever.
That's so cool.
Yeah, he's become like a really, really close friend, almost like a pseudo grandpa. I'm sure he would hate that I said that, but and he's old, you know.
He's old.
That's how I get my tee times, really. If I can't find anything, I just text him. I'm like, hey, are we playing this week? He's like, yeah, sure. I'm like, great.
All right. So perfect.
He's awesome.
Sign me up.
He gets the Rancho times.
Oh no.
He gets the 14 days.
Oh,
the
no.
unicorn.
That is,
you know, he's getting the Rancho times.
Dang.
It's so hot. Rancho.
I mean, I haven't found a Rancho time
in months.
It's been months. It's been years since we've played Rancho.
I don't think I've played Rancho since they shut down for COVID.
Yeah.
Yeah.
That's same.
Like I was playing, same. Like I was like, cool, let's get out. I was like, oh, no one's doing anything. Let's go play Rancho. Great. Best course in LA that we can get on, you know? Boom. And then that's all gone.
Love it. Love it. This is great. So tell me about, like, you know, on your social, like, you have a relationship with some of the coolest brands.
You become a golf influencer.
Yeah. You're a golf influencer.
Nah.
You really are.
Golf creator. How about golf
sure,
creator?
Sure. I would. Yeah. Golf creative is fine. I was like, I like to just be like, that was the thing, because in the beginning, I really did want to be an influencer. I really did. And then after a while, I was like, it just didn't feel like me. It was very soul sucking for me, like where it'd be like, hey, we want to send you this product and we want you to like, you know, like let your people know. I'm like, all right, just so y'all know, my followers are Justin Timberlake fanboys and fangirls. I toured with Joe Jonas, so you're getting all the Jonas kids, and it's also like the 7 to 13 year old kids that I teach dance to. I'm gonna let everyone know,
teach me,
they do not like golf. They don't like golf. They really don't. Everyone thinks it's funny that I love golf so much. Everyone knows me as the guy that teaches hip-hop dance but also loves golf. I'm like, yeah, sure. So the influencer thing is, it's not my cup of tea. I would like to showcase, especially my community, the dance community, especially all of these kids, how accessible golf can be and how that stigma that has been put onto golf from probably their grandparents or their parents or just the way that they view it is not reality.
Mm-hmm.
Golf can be whatever reality you truly want it to be. You just need to know that it exists and be willing to find it
for sure.
Yeah.
I've gotten super lucky with a lot of the people that I've gotten to work with, get to work alongside, that do have, you know, really cool clothing brands and just like make golf aesthetically pleasing for me. Like I love fashion. I love really cool clothes. And I worked at Trendy Golf for a period of time. Like, I like clothes, you know, look good, feel good, play good. And I've gotten really lucky that, those people seem to enjoy some of the things that I can do and I'm just, you know, fortunate.
And do you think it's because of your photography that has like made those connections with those brands or what, like, you know, for example, Malvin, like how did that relationship come about?
I got in with them because of, let's see. I went to an event years and years and years ago when they still had their shop on Fairfax. And I met Cole, Cole Young, and we were chatting with him, and he's like, "Where are you from?" I was like, "I'm from North Carolina." He's like, "Oh," he's like, "I'm from North Carolina." He's like, "My grandparents have a house over at Pinehurst." And I was like, "Oh, damn, like that's crazy." So that was like a North Carolina connection.
Yeah.
And then like obviously meeting Cole, then I got to meet Steven and got to, you know, just like chat with them. And then kind of just like allowing myself to be around, you know. Some of the stuff that I have shot for Malbin and everything, it was literally just very similar to how I got the Justin job. It was just like, "Hey, our photographer is sick. Is there any way you can come down and help us out?" That's awesome. Like, "Oh yeah, sure." And then I show up and then it's a campaign. I'm like, "Oh damn. Okay, cool." Like, So I've just gotten lucky. I really have just gotten so lucky. Like even working at Trendy Golf, like the way that I got in with that is like, they just needed help editing and I just wanted some extra cash. So I was like, "Yeah, sure." I was like, "I'm down." And then ended up getting a job there. Nice. And then obviously made some connections with a lot of golf brands through that job. And I've been very fortunate, you know, shout out to everyone at Trendy Golf that, you know, let me be there and enjoy the space with them. Malbin was super nice. And then I think it's just one of those things, like when you go to events, you know, and then I would like for my work or my photography to hopefully speak for itself. And if people find value in that and want to bring me in to hopefully showcase their brand, I appreciate the fact that people view things that I can do that they think can help match their brand's aesthetic or help elevate their brand or show their brand in the way that they want it to be shown. And I feel like I've had a lot of trust put in me from people that I really respect. And I'm just very fortunate to have had those opportunities come my way.
That's amazing, dude. That's amazing. I mean, how cool is that? I mean, like
it's wild. Like it's
that,
wild.
Yeah. I mean, you are in touch and hanging out with some of the most iconic golf brands in the world. And that's pretty cool. You've danced with one of the top artists ever. You are with some of the biggest golf brands, and you know, you're taking photos and everything. That's hats off to you, man. You've made it.
Oh, thank you. Thank you. I mean, I'm still on my way. I've just gotten to the point now with my photography where I have stopped telling people I don't know what I'm doing. I just get lucky. I still don't necessarily know if I do know what I'm doing. When I see something that I think that I like and I'm like, "Oh, I like the look of that," I just kind of go with my gut. And I think a lot of that does come from dance, just because you just got to like when I told my dance teachers I was moving to LA, they like my dance teachers laughed in my face. They were like, "Wouldn't you?" Like, you know, like, no, it's not that no one believed in me. Like, it just was one of those things where it didn't make sense to a lot of people back home.
Right.
So usually I just go what like kind of gets me excited about being alive. And I kind of just have been chasing that feeling, whether it was a dance thing or now when it's a golf thing, it's just like, "Okay, cool. Like I like these clothes or I love this golf course or whatever it is." Like I just like whatever excites me, you know, kind of is where I try to put my attention.
Dude, awesome. Do what you love and you never work a day in your life, right?
Yeah, absolutely. Unless you're editing photos.
Yeah. So I do have a question. What is your lowest round ever?
Lowest round ever is a 74.
Nice. Ooh, good one. Couple good. Over. Yeah. Par 72?
74.
Par 72. Boy. Nice. Yeah. Nice. Yeah. All right. Golf.
Completely unconscious.
Yes. It is like that when you're playing that well, right? It's just like nothing you can do goes bad.
Yeah, literally nothing. Oh, I missed the green. Oh, chipped to 2 inches. Yeah. Cool. No
right.
Tap. Let's get out of here.
Tap in. Yep.
Easy game.
All right. Golf pet peeve.
Golf pet peeve pretty much would be slow play. 100% slow play. Feels extremely disrespectful. I know all the common adages of like, if you're going to suck, suck fast and everything, all that stuff. It's like, but if you don't know that you, most people know that they suck,
most people,
you know, I don't think they understand. Like, I think when you are in that situation, just pick up, you're not playing for a score anyways.
Right.
You're not playing for a score. Like, so I think also keeping score is overrated, even though I just said that my lowest round was 74, which is, you know, great for me. But yeah, I think one of my biggest pet peeves is I like to walk. I like to walk. I'm a big advocate of walking. I'll take the cart if I have to. But my biggest pet peeve is when I'm waiting on a group. This is back to the slow play. And I know the next tee is to the left of the green. I see someone putting from the right side of the green, finish out the hole, walk back to the right side of the green to pick up their bag or to get their cart, and then walk all the way back across the green to go to the next tee box.
Yes.
I'm like, it's cool that you're in the moment. That's very Buddhist of you and being exactly where you're supposed to be. Like, that's fantastic. But also, it's not going to kill you. Just take one single second and be like, where's the next tee box? Let me set myself up for success and just put my stuff over here.
Yep.
That saves
so simple.
That saved a whole minute.
Simple.
Not to mention, literally, most people know where the next hole is. You play that course multiple times. You know where it's at.
For sure.
Exactly.
And even if you are new, when you walk up to the green, if you're on a golf course where you can see the next tee, it's not even if you can see the next tee. Where's the cart path?
Yeah. Where's the sidewalk?
Where's the cart path?
Yes. Follow the cart path.
It's not that deep. It's not that deep. You know, like, I think, It's a fine line, because with golf, you want to be very present. You want to be exactly where you are. Like, okay, cool. I can chip on. I can get this putt, and then we can move to the next hole. But it only takes like less than a second to hit a golf ball. So in all of those other seconds, you could maybe just like think about someone else besides yourself. I think that would be really cool. Like, think about the people that you're playing with. Club throwers, people that break clubs are just like, oh, okay, this might supersede slow play.
I love this.
All of the golf videos of people running over each other with
bananas, dude. Bananas.
What are people thinking?
The dumbest thing. All those people that you see in those videos are still on their parents' health care from Obamacare. All of those people have no worries. It is the ultimate, like, oh, my dad's going to pay for this. And I, you know, like, dude. It is so dumb
people that drive them like over the hills and stuff and crash them. Like, what are you guys doing out there? What
are you doing? What,
that's so crazy that they do
literally
that.
No respect for yourself or anyone else.
Yeah, it's just like, why did you come out here? I have no problem, like, if you want to go out there and get blasted and crush a bunch of beers, like, you take a beer every time you get a bogey, cool, like, that's fine, like, I have no issue with that. But if you get so sloppy that you're like, you want to know what would be a good idea? I'm going to Tony Hawk Pro Skater this golf cart off of this ridge. You're like, cool, bro. Like, just leave. Call an Uber.
Yeah.
Call an Uber.
We do have a game call we play here at Segment First called Bogey Blackout, where if you get a bogey, you have to take a shot.
Yeah, what's wrong with that?
Yeah, nothing.
Hammered.
Yeah. Well, you do have to do, like, there's times where you're like, do I want the shot if I make this bogey putt, or if I just miss it, I'm good. I don't have to take the shot.
I'll take it the double bogey.
I'll just take the double bogey and the worst score. So it's either make your par putt or
there's some strategery in this game.
My buddy that I mentioned earlier, Rich Guerin, the 75-year-old, his rules for golf are anytime you make a birdie or a double bogey, you have to smoke a joint. And he grows all of his own stuff and everything. And he always comes like with like pre-rolls and everything. And so every time he's like, oh, good birdie. I get it. I like the worst thing for a golfer is to birdie the first hole.
Yeah.
The worst thing for a golfer is to tee off at 6:30 a.m., birdie the first hole, and then be handed a pre-roll.
I'd be hiding in the bushes.
High by 6:45.
Yeah. Oh yeah. I enjoy smoking weed from time to time, but again, like, being like blitzed out of your mind at 6:45 in the morning on like Balboa and Encino.
There
you go. It's like, cause you're on, if you're playing Encino, you get to the second tee box, you got to hit that hook
over the tree.
The blue tees. No, I've never once hit that fairway after smoking a joint. I literally every single time, it is so far right. I'm like, I'm lucky if I even get any part of the club face on that golf.
You got to push back the start time on that. Like, we can't do this until like
at least
eight. He's the one getting the tee times.
I love it. All right, so we have a segment called Amateur Hour where we try to educate the new golfers on things that they can do to help their game, speed up play, that blah blah blah. Do you have a piece of advice for them?
Definitely the piece of advice would go back to looking where the next tee box is, putting your bags or whatever it is, your cart in that vicinity. So that way it just helps the natural flow. It's like cutting someone off in traffic. You're like, what are you doing? Like, we're all going to the same, we're literally all going to the same place right now. Like, and I think allowing people to know, like, to take your ego out of it, like, don't teach golf lessons on the golf course.
No.
Don't do it. Go to Whitsett. Go to Whitsett.
Yes.
Go to Los Feliz Par 3. Go to the Van Nuys Par 3.
Mm-hmm.
Like, those are the perfect places to learn how to play the game. And that's what I do with my wife. Like, I will go and I will hit a tee shot at Whitsett. Wherever my ball lands, I will then drop her ball at the exact same place. And I call it the Ashley par. And she has three strokes from wherever that ball is to get it in the hole.
Perfect.
Because all she's doing then is putting and chipping.
Yes.
She's not hitting like, oh gosh, this is 135-yard hole. Like, oh, number eight, 135 yards. What should I hit? I'm like, nothing. You should hit nothing.
Well, throw the ball. And it makes it fun for her too, because she's not hitting that 135-yard shot. It's like, I can chip and putt.
That way she learns how to score. When she makes a birdie, she's still excited. Yes. You know, she still understands how the game works, the scoring aspect of it. And if she wants to keep going, she's more than welcome. I will not be my wife's golf coach. I've already talked to Del Barrio about that. I will cede my lessons to my wife. But I think a lot of it is like putting your ego aside. And if like, if you're just like topping the ball or like whiffing completely, pick it up.
Yeah.
Pick it up and go put the ball by the side of the green and just chip and putt it out. I don't care if you made a 12. Total. I don't care. Literally no one cares.
Nobody cares.
You made a 12.
No one cares. There's actually golf hats that say nobody cares what you shot. And it's true.
It's true.
Nobody cares.
It's true.
I mean, I care when I shoot in 70s, you know, like cool, know, that's awesome. But if I shoot a 95, nobody cares. Yeah,
but even if you told someone that you shot a 70, no one's going to care.
Nobody cares. You're right. Yeah. Nobody cares.
Yeah. They only care. It's like, all right, cool. You find out like, oh, what's your handicap? Like this happened to me. This is a tangent. Sorry. This happened to me at Rustic a couple months ago, maybe. What's your handicap? I'm a 6.8. Oh, okay. Well, I'm a plus one. I'm like, good for you. Did you just ask so you could flex?
Yeah, that was 100%
for sure.
Cool. And he was like, well, do you want to gamble? And I was like, I'm just lucky to have a tee time, my guy. Like, I'm like, sure. I'm like, I'm down to gamble, but I don't know any of the games or whatever it is. Like, so I was like, if you want to keep track of it, I'm all for it. Let's do it. He's like, I'm gonna play the tips. I was like, I'm not.
Right.
I'm going to play the blues.
Yeah.
I'm playing the blues.
Yes.
So I played the blues. He was like, fine. Since you're playing one tee box up, he's like, you're a 6.8. So he's like, really, you're like a six. I'm like, that's not how
that's
math
not
works.
True. Yep.
Sure. He was like, I'll give you three shots aside. I was like, you are so bad at math. But I was like, whatever. I was like, whatever. The dude shoots 85.
What?
Oh.
He's a plus one.
With a plus one, I happened to shoot 79.
Nice.
And the dude was calling me a sandbagger. And I was like, here's my gin. Like, what do you want? Like, what do you want me to do?
Yeah.
Like, you just played like trash. Like, what do you want me to do? And then when he gave me all the money that I won, he did the whole, like when he went to hand it to me, like when I went to grab it, and then he just like let go of it.
I was like,
you asked for this.
Yeah.
You asked for this.
You were just out for a stroll and the guy wanted to try to make money.
I didn't care.
I had some guy in New York try to do that to me too once. We were in New York and this guy was like,
I
was playing really bad. I'm not a good golfer. And I was playing bad and something happened. He was like, oh, you want to play for money? You guys are playing for money? He's talking about Heath. And I was like, yeah, but not much. And he's like, well, do you want to play for real money? And I was like, well, what's big money? And he's like, 100 a hole.
Okay.
And I was like, and I've watched this guy.
This guy was not good.
This guy was not good at
this
all.
Not, this
and
guy
I knew
was
I was playing
good.
Worse than I normally play. And I was like, 100 a hole? And he's like, yeah. And I was like, all right, I'll play you 100 a hole. And we were on 9. And I ended up winning eight of the next 9 holes. So I won $800 off the
it
guy.
It was phenomenal to watch.
And yeah. As soon as we decided to play, I started hitting it straight. Like my first shot was right down the middle. And like it was,
it was crazy.
It's
no
funny
strokes.
I did that with my dad when my dad was first teaching me. Like we'd go to that little par 3 course. I'd miss. And then he'd put a ball down and he would be like, I'll bet you $20 you can't hit this green. Boom. Right next to the flagstick. Like, yeah. And yeah. It's just always been that way. I don't really care about playing for money. It's not a motivator for me. Like, I'm not like, oh, if I miss this putt, I'm like, I don't care. Like, I just love to golf, whether it's for money, whether it's not for money. I love golf either way. So,
mine was that he was trying to flex and be like big money guy and like, oh, you want to bet for money? Yeah. And I was like, yeah, I'll take your money.
It was like the perfect
it's like
story.
No problem. Yeah.
It was storybook. Yeah. It was great.
Sure. I wasn't coming out here to play for golf money today. I was worried about losing to him. Like, I don't
know. You're like, but now I'm going to go play Pebble.
Right.
Exactly. Thanks for the free round. It's one of the best golf courses ever.
We had a lot of drinks that night afterwards. Yeah. It was amazing.
New York City.
He was like, drinks on me. I was like, yes, sir.
Yeah, absolutely.
So let's move on to the segment called Second One First. So this is where we like to call a mulligan in something in life. A little craziness happens. What is your second one first?
Okay. So when you texted me this yesterday, I was going through the Rolodex of the dumb things that I have done in my life. One of them, I have three.
Okay.
Yes,
bring it.
The first one was hosting a beer pong competition at my buddy's house while his parents were out of town. And not letting the guy know that we were doing that. We just kind of showed up and took over his garage.
When was this? Were you in like
week?
High
senior,
school?
Senior year of high school.
Okay. All right. Okay.
Yeah. The beard really, really helped in his senior year.
Those fake IDs were pretty good.
My fake ID said I was 28 years old when I was 17 and I never once got a question for it. That was awesome.
Nice.
So that was one thing. I, of course, ended up getting arrested that night.
Get out of here.
Exactly.
What? You have a record?
We did everything right. We did everything right. You know, we got a DD. We went to the football game, did the whole thing.
You had awesome brochures.
We did everything. We did all of it. We're at the game. And I'm like, I'm so drunk, which me and my best friend Spencer, shout out to Spencer, we won 8 games of Pong in a row. We were like, he always called us Captain Geach and the Shrimp Shack Shooter. If anyone knows that reference, shout out to you if you do. And so we go, we're sitting in the stands and I'm sitting. I was the senior representative on student council. I did all the pep rallies. I did the tailgates. I went to go to Costco and do hot dogs and burgers for the whole student body. Come in. If you're a Butler student, you get free food. Like I did all of that. So I'm sitting down at the game because I'm just so gassed from the beer pong tournament, from cooking hot dogs and hamburgers for everyone. And my vice principal, Matt, why don't you come down here? Nope. I'm good. I'm good, Miss Andrews. I'm good right here. She goes, no, why don't you come down here? We go down there, go on the track. The game is happening. This is mid-football game. Track, cool. She goes, have you been drinking? I was like, no. She was like, where's Spencer? And because that's how we were known. Like it was always us getting in trouble. Like I was the quote unquote good kid.
Uh-huh.
Like never missed a day of school, all of that stuff. Perfect attendance until junior year, all that stuff. And he was the quote unquote bad influence, which is not true. But where's Spencer? Who's Spencer?
Really playing.
Way to cover it.
Just my best friend.
Yeah.
But who is that?
Yeah. And
play the cool.
I turn around and I see Spencer doing like the West Side Story flip over the gate. You know, like how they would do it in the movie. They'd crawl up, they just like put their whole torso over it.
Yeah,
and legs would just flip over.
Yeah.
Yeah. So I just see Spencer's feet flying over the fence. And so he was gone. He didn't get in trouble. But yeah. And then our police liaison officer was like, "Oh, Matt, come with me, blah, blah, blah." Did a breathalyzer, got arrested, quote unquote, got like face down on the track in front of the entire student body. Like, honestly, it was probably the best. I got so much street cred
for
that.
For sure. You're the
like,
bad boy now.
I got kicked off of student council, and then the entire student body voted, like signed a petition and voted me back on to student council. And so if I had a mulligan, I probably wouldn't have gone to that game. I would have had the tournament. I just wouldn't have gone to the game.
Yeah. Or you would have flipped over the fence like Spencer did.
Well, for sure. Because then, then the police officer drove me to my house, which was nice. Because when I got in the car, she was like, "What are you doing in the car?" I was like, "Why did you put me in the car? Like, come on." And so she was like, "Well, I'm just going to take you home." I was like, "Oh, my God."
So no ticket or MIP or anything? You didn't get?
Nope.
Oh,
nope.
Nice.
Man, nope. Your nope. principal, not a nice, nice person. Holy cow.
Yeah, seriously.
Well, it was the band director.
Oh, I've
he ratted me out.
I was in show choir and I had a run in with our band director because he was a jerk. Our band director was a jerk and he,
same.
He didn't like the show choir. Didn't like the show choir and him. And I don't hold my tongue back when someone's mean. So he was a dick one time and I got sent to in school suspension. It was awesome.
ISS.
I got ISS for 2 weeks after that. So, which was great because I got directors. So much work done because they just like sent me so much work.
Yeah.
And I was a good student, you know? And then by the time I got done with ISS and went back to my classes, I was 2 weeks ahead of schedule.
Nice.
I had taken all the tests and quizzes and everything. So I just slept in class for the next 2 weeks after.
You got so smart in those 2 weeks.
Let me see. I did say I had three. I'll just make it short. Just do two. The last one is a dance one. Where I guess it's kind of two dance ones where I would take bets before going to certain auditions because I was broke. I needed money. So I was going to a dance audition for a Nickelodeon show. I had literally just the week prior done a Nickelodeon show and was then referred by the choreographer of that episode to this choreographer that was holding this next audition. "Hey, this kid was great. He's like, blah, blah, blah. You should watch out for him at the audition." Cool. I got bet $100 from three of my friends, so $300 to show up for this Nickelodeon audition with a handlebar mustache.
Right. Very kid friendly.
Very, very Nickelodeon.
Yeah.
And so I did it. Again, the beard is pretty prominent. So I did the thick, full on handlebar mustache and showed up to the audition. And for people that don't know, this is when you go to an audition, there's 300 people and they typecast.
Mm-hmm.
So he went through, he was like, "All right, we're going to do some typecasting real quick. Everyone line up," lined everybody in the audition up, kept every single person that showed up to the audition, except for me.
Get out of here.
Cut me in front of all of those people. Because I showed up.
Were you like, I'll go shave.
But you know what? That $300, that's a decent day rate right there.
He lost
the $300. Honestly, it was probably better than the 8-hour rate they were getting. Yeah,
that's pretty good.
So that was one. Another one, I showed up to the Rihanna audition because it says like, males, be ready to like take your shirt off, you know, at some point, you know?
Yeah.
And I, at the time, I'm 6 feet tall, 6'1" on a good day. And probably at that point, probably 165 pounds. I am built like a scaffolding post. Like I am little. So I got bet $100 from four different people. So $400 for this one to do the entire audition shirtless.
like walk in, take it off.
Oh, no, I took it off when I got out of my car. I did the sign in, everything, completely shirtless. I actually made it to the final round of cuts for that one. There was like six of us left and they needed four guys. And then I got cut right at the end. But
did you put makeup abs on? Did you draw the?
Nah, man. Nah, man. This is when I still had like abs because I was just like young. My metabolism was so fast. Like that's all I had was abs. That's all was it. It was just like everything else was bone and clavicle and abs. Yeah. But if I had any mulligans, I would probably show up for a job that I actually wanted, like actually prepared for the job, as opposed to taking some bets.
Well, Matt, we had such a good time with you. Thank you so much for your time and coming on and sharing your knowledge, your history with us. We will be in touch soon. Hope you can come back on. And
please, I would love to come back.
Let's play some golf sometime.
Yeah.
Dude, I'm so down. If any one of us can find the tee time. yeah. Like I said, I'm gone pretty much most weekends, but weekdays, literally hit me up. I'm down whenever.
Love it.
Sounds good, man.
Love it.
Yeah, appreciate it. That would be great. I'd love that.
Thank you so much. We really appreciate it, man.
Thanks, guys. This is a lot of fun. I appreciate y'all having me.
Definitely. Thanks.
Well, you heard all those sound effects because we just covered Amateur Hour and Second One First in that segment.
It was great. It was great. We appreciate Matt for hanging out with us for a little bit. That was fun. Good. That was fun.
A little. He told us off air.
Yeah.
That he's the social media photographer for the Masters.
Yeah. I mean, no big deal. And NBD.
No, NBD.
NBD. I mean, that's pretty sweet. Yeah. He was a good guest. We really appreciate his time.
Should we head over to He's Called Joke of the Week?
Yeah, let's do it. Vinny.
Yes, you.
Do you know why computers make the best golfers? Because they have hard drives.
So bad.
Thank you very much. Thank you so much for spending some time with us tonight with Second One First. Make sure you
Or the afternoon if you're listening in the morning.
Or
breakfast.
Today, whenever you're listening. Thank you so much. Make sure you like, subscribe, and review our podcast wherever you get your podcasts. And make sure you hit the Second One First.